Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back, and it is now or never. And I'm hoping that you are appreciating the content that we provide, because if we're not learning, if we don't understand the fundamentals of our Constitution, and we don't understand how simple this really is, don't let anybody, by the way, don't let these conservative entertainers like Mark Levin or anybody that has a law degree, oh, it's complicated. No, it's not. This week we prove to you that the ratification debates, how things were defined, how the Federalists laid out the terms and definitions, those are the legal binding stipulations as to what that what each of those lines in the Constitution and words mean. Period. It's that simple. It's like basically placing full context to contract law. Now, all of these lawyers that are running around, yo, I'm a constitutional lawyer. Have you ever heard of a Verizon lawyer? Well, Verizon has lawyers, or Verizon Law, actually. Or how about AT&T Law? A contract does not beget a law. In other words, when you look at the simplicity of the contract, what powers do they have? There's nothing, and as a matter of fact, it was clear. Hamilton got away with redefining the Constitution that the judiciary could actually interpret, and that there were implied powers. Just because people agreed with Hamilton and they went down this path doesn't mean that it was right, nor was it constitutional. It was there is no evidence, folks, there is no evidence at all. As a matter of fact, had those words been uttered by a Federalist in the ratification debates, oh, there's implied powers here, folks. Had that actually been said by Madison or by Iredell or by Wilson in these different debates, Virginia, North Carolina, Pennsylvania specifically, and even New York, and Hamilton said, oh, no, be clear, there are implied powers here. We can, if we can create an implication, you know, the federal government can do it. Then the Constitution would have been, it would have never been ratified. And as a matter of fact, let me place context to this. Madison kept on saying, and you heard it this week, and you're hearing it next week. Madison kept saying that, look, this Constitution was justified by the explicit powers, that they could not do anything unless it was derived from that power. In other words, no implication. And so as we went through the bank, in these implied powers of creating a bank, Jefferson shut that argument down. And as I read, so I got this document from the Heritage Foundation. It's kind of a book. It's 300 some pages about the founders and framers, and they gloss over and they accept these unconstitutional definitions. In other words, folks, we're better to have a government that is more pliable and not rigid to the compact, because then we're actually being tossed to the wolves, because it's the wolves' discretion on whether they'll eat us or not. Jefferson talked about this in the Virginia, or not the Virginia, the Kentucky resolutions, that this concept of this unlimited government would basically leave the discretion to those who govern. So I want to be very, very clear that as we go through this, you're going to realize why Hamilton has so much blood on his hands, because what he did. Now, here's the question. Here's the question. Did he know these things? Was this something? Because I can't judge the man. And I know that in the divine nature of things, we all have to face our comeuppance. We all have to face the karma, right? It's going to come back to us. And so in the Christian context, there's a lot of people that have suffered. And so because of what has happened, as a matter of fact, over the course of this journey in trying to, and this plight in trying to get full compliance of the Constitution, what would it take? Republic review is what it would take to do this. Taking back your counties and your state governments, interposition is what it takes. It can't be done by a convention of states. It cannot be done through the court system. And as a matter of fact, we're going to dive into the parties. It cannot be done as the parties are operating today. We must actually void ourselves of factions. We must void ourselves of accepting anything that is not within the full context of how that Constitution was defined. We have to definitize it. We have to get back to it. This is why when you read these petitions, when you read our petitions, these petitions clearly boil and distill down what has to happen. Even though it may not be clear, you know, in some ways, when you have to write a book of this process of painting by numbers, right? We're gonna paint this picture by numbers and restore our constitutional government. It would take so much effort and time, pages, to break it down for the sixth grader to understand that nobody would take the time. There'd be so much that you couldn't comprehend it in an epiphany that it makes a lot of people just start deviating and going down all of these different discourses because they can't maintain a macro view. Now, there's reasons why we're in this mess. And we have to back out. We have to basically separate ourselves from our self-interest. We have to separate ourselves from our differences. We actually have to come together by doing that. We have to actually put aside our differences and our self-interest. We have to humble ourselves and say, this is not for me. This is not for you. This is for our posterity. This is for our future generations, that they may live a life where they can choose for themselves what they want to do so that government cannot compel and control them. Now, we have to go into some obligatories, and the one obligatory I need to cover is that debt is fraud. I can't say this enough. The debt that we're dealing with is fraud. And so what they want you to do, because this is warfare, this is like psyops. When you look at that debt, that actually functions as a psyop because it creates so much angst and anxiety and fear in the people. When we look at that, oh, we're going to get to the point where we can't service our debt. Folks, don't get caught up in that frenzy. You have to be resolved. You have to be calm-headed. And you have to start telling your representatives that debt is fraud, that every penny that they're spending. Because once you place context in the Constitution as a compact, once you place context in all of these things, it actually shuts up these people that are blathering, oh, the Federalist Papers and all, you know, no, it's this complex crap. No, it's not. You don't have the authority to do these things, and we're shutting you down. Because when the federal government comes and says, oh, well, shoot, this really got out of our control. You know, it started going sideways a long time ago. We did everything we could, but, you know, we can't do anything anymore. So we're just going to have to, you know, merge into, for the greater good of the world. We're all world citizens here. We've been indoctrinated in our education system to believe this. And folks, the world is depending on us to hold the line in ensuring that we don't slip. I'm talking about the lives of the world. They may all actually believe that we all have to go down this journey together. No. every person has a right to decide for themselves. And this is the difference of America and why it was founded. This is where we're coming to that pinnacle. We're reaching the pinnacle of all things to whether we are going to sustain and retain for ourselves as the world falls. Or will America fall and so goes the world? Because even though the world may fall, America does not have to. We have the ability to pull back, and all it takes is your state legislatures to say, you do not have that authority over that Constitution. It's time we start getting smart, and it's time we stop allowing people to scare us and to say, oh, it's complicated. No, it is. There's nothing complicated about it. If they don't have the authority, they don't have the authority to be spraying us overhead with these chemtrails, with this tropospheric spraying and the poisoning that they're doing. They don't have the ability to use their spending as weapons against us, to basically, you know, go after the carbon capture systems, which are failing. They're going bankrupt. This is all a design to take us in so many different directions. The voices of reason need to prevail, folks. The conservatives, in the word conservative, that word means to preserve what you have now. Do you want to preserve what we have now? I don't. The word progressive, means, you know, improving and moving forward and improving. I would like to think that those who are constitutionalists are true progressives and true and the original definition of a liberal, somebody that is going back to you have to choose for yourself. You have to get educated and you have to suffer the consequences of your decisions. That's a true liberal. I believe moving in that direction, a true progressive thing where everybody has the ability to choose. This goes back to also another epiphany I had. I've had a lot of different conversations this week. And one of the conversations really came down to this war, this civil war that we've been fighting. In biblical context, this goes back to the war in heaven when Lucifer convinced one third of the host of heaven to come down or actually to leave or to revolt against the plan of Christ, where we had to choose, where we had to come down here and choose for ourselves. In essence, the freedom of choice, liberty, the responsibility for suffering or basically taking responsibility for your actions, this concept of liberty that we're looking at in Christ's plan, the antithesis of that is entitlement. That, I believe, is the essence of what Lucifer actually presented, that convinced people that, no, we're entitled. I mean, here we are, spiritual beings. We should be entitled to be able to return, to have the full blessings of everything. The entitlement is a very satanic ideology. And as a matter of fact, when we look at, because this came up in the conversation, I was talking to a friend who's in construction, and they build these custom homes and so forth, and they are still suffering. And it's not just the construction industry. It is every industry is suffering because of the big gulp of entitlement that occurred when the government protected us for COVID. Had we actually been free to choose, had we been able to do and make the decisions for ourselves, we would have came out far better. But there were so many people, and this is the indictment. So many people said, you know what, I'm making unemployment. They're extending the fact that I don't even have to pay my rent. They're extending all of these things. And now I have to start paying my rent. Okay, well, you know, I'll move and I won't have to worry about the obligation. I just stuck it to the man. Actually, we're just sticking it to ourselves. And what we're doing is it actually enabled bad behavior, folks. I mean, I've said this before. When we look at government has gone into the business of removing the consequences of sin, all it does is enable bad behavior. And that's exactly what's been happening. They've been removing the consequences. Oh, you don't have to pay your rent. You don't have to pay this. You don't, you know, they have been enabling bad behavior. It's the same thing with venereal disease. Oh, well, if you get a venereal disease, we've got these cures now for you. We're even close to, you know, completely curing AIDS, maybe. I have no idea. But that's their goal, is to remove all of the consequences of sin. So what's holding you back? Why aren't you going out and just, you know, doing it in public? That's, they don't care. Oh, yeah, well, they'll arrest you if, and they'll actually come after you with all guns blazing if you're a critic of them and the system. Just like January 6th. But, oh, you know, you could burn down the city, and that's okay. Yeah, you had a right to protest. Ah, but if you drive your car into those protesters and hurt them or kill somebody, oh, you're going to be torched, especially if they can tie it to a hate crime. These concepts of hate, what sin isn't driven by some form of hate? When we really start breaking things down and we start looking at words, we have been lulled into believing that conservative is good and progressives are bad. Word-wise, I think the conservative word is a terrible word. It means that we want to preserve this crap, this government that's fighting warfare against us and had been doing so for decades. Why would you want to conserve this? Progressives are actually trying to push us towards communism. That's not progressive. That's destructive. When we really look at what the progressives are doing, they are using tools, efforts, and everything. Their focus is to destroy our liberties and to destroy us. How is that progressive? How did they get a chance? And so it's almost like somebody very crafty, thinking about Lucifer again, has actually been able to co-opt the words and make evil good and good evil. Wow, does that sound like the times of, you know, the great and dreadful day type of thing? Absolutely it does. So we don't want to pull our punches. I don't want to pull my punches on this show, and I think you deserve the best. I think you deserve the truth. I will say this, because I know I upset people because I actually said something bad about Trump. I get a lot of heat when I say this or that because you don't like it. Bottom line, we're all people, and everybody has to deal with their own judges, and there's no one size fits all. I am not going to excuse my shortcomings. I'm humble enough to acknowledge that I don't know everything, but apparently I know a heck of a lot more than anybody else I've ran into when it comes to the Constitution. And I don't know why that is. Or maybe the people I'm running into don't care about knowing the Constitution. They only care about how they're attacking it. And that's their job. Maybe they just accepted their position. But I think my position, and in essence, this is what I did when I started writing my first book. When I actually said I was going to write a book when I was in the Marine Corps, my calling has been to challenge paradigms, because the only way we actually start becoming critical thinkers is when we can actually accept and challenge our paradigms. Okay, I've got these biases. I've got to challenge that, and I must actually think with cognitive reasoning. Am I correct in my paradigms? That is, in essence, the enlightenment of academia, free academia. So, as the liberals have succeeded in convincing conservatives in running a race to the bottom, because these two sides, conservatives and progressives, or liberals, these guys are actually two sides of the same coin. And they're in a race to the bottom. And this race is pushing us to our destruction. So there's that old saying, misery loves company. And that company, or that desire for having that company, is getting to a point where they're demanding it. We no longer have a right to not be in their company. We have to be miserable, and they're demanding it. That their tolerance, their lack of tolerance, will overwhelm you when you finally face the iron fist that they hold. Thus, the party and the problem with the party, and why I've been saying, and my comment at the beginning of the week regarding Trump, getting the pound of flesh, all these people that have been writing checks, doing things that are absolutely unconstitutional. When you boil it down, when we distilled the Constitution, as Madison basically stated, and I think Madison has been the only consistent person out of all, Thomas Jefferson too. I mean, Thomas Jefferson, I mean, he wasn't a part of the design of the Constitution, but he never, never created and supported any contrary thoughts to the essence of the compact, that we had to live out by how that compact was sold in those ratification debates. Why is it that nobody else is taking that line? Because if you take that line, then there's no ambiguity regarding the compact. It is black and white. How was it defined? And that's how we have to move forward. Period. It takes away their ability to bend the law. And you know what? This is what makes my stomach curl when I see lawyers enjoying the process of arguing ideas to bend the law, to get their client off for murder, to be able to do something to say, I did that. And as a matter of fact, that kind of leads to, you know, some of the many conversations I've been having over this past several years. And it, as of late, it has been dealing with these different flavors of, oh, we're going to be using affidavits. We're going to be using jural assemblies. We're, all of these different things that I call really either a part of the court system. There's this hybrid of problems in the conservative movement. And these people are false prophets. We have such a, and I look at these people that are speaking, because I'm not here to tell you what you have to do. I'm not telling you to come follow me. I am telling you to read the ratification debates. I'm giving you the empirical data, exactly what Madison said, and this is what we need to do. We need to follow how that thing was sold by what they said, not by what I say. So there's a huge difference. And so I barely got a minute. So when we come back from the break, because I got a minute and a half here technically. And so when we come back from the break, I'm going to dive into, because this is all unscripted. This is one of those shows that is completely off the cuff. And so I'm going to dive into a very specific group, because, and I want to talk about what it means to be a defeatist and how defeatists are actually very negative and destructive. But what I want to do is I think we have to be, one, pragmatic, and I think, two, we have to be genuine and honest and upfront. And so I'm going to come back from the break, and I'm going to be genuine, honest, and upfront with you. I'm going to tell you that when we look at what's been happening in the court system, I can tell you without any reservation that we will never find justice in our existing court system. It's impossible. We have to restore our court system. And people that are actually getting you to just go and play in the court system and use these administrative procedures that are these little cracks in the system. Oh, these work. Look at, we're working. I am here to tell you folks, they cannot solve the problem. The only thing that will solve the problem in getting the government into full compliance is interposition. It's a waste of time. And that comes across to everybody that I've been talking to as defeatist. Wow. That is the reality. So what we're doing is, when we come back, I'm going to kind of talk about something very specific and dear to, because I live in the state of Washington. And we're going to talk about this hope, this, and I'm going to call it a false hope, but I'm going to bank on this. And I, again, because it's not about being defeatist, but it's about being honest with you. And so I'm going to be honest, and I'm going to tell you what the punches are and how they're going to land. We'll be right back after this. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so I am not going to be even defeatist regarding these pleas from good, righteous people that say America needs to repent. Folks, as a matter of fact, I'm going to lead on this because this is what I'm asking you to do. I want you to ponder these concepts, these words, and what I'm saying. I'm not asking you to follow me. I'm asking you to actually become the leader that we all need to start seeing in every one of us. Because leaders do not fight for control. Leaders actually allow the common sense, logic, and reason in working together. Because actually, a leader doesn't want to control anything. That's a manager. A leader actually wants the problem to be resolved and using the core principles that all embrace in working together. What the leader will do is they'll delegate so that somebody, you know, you're the subject matter expert, you go do this. Delegate and empower. I'm asking everybody to start stepping in and start thinking and acting like a leader. And the way to do this, the only way you can actually really lead in this process, is you're going to have to take time, fast, and prayer. You'll have to do that. If you begin fasting and praying and actually seek the guidance of the Spirit, because there's no doubt in my mind, as long as the Spirit is guiding us, we're not going to make any mistakes. So, and you won't make that mistake either. And so this is how we kind of keep ourselves from falling into the trappings. The Bible is filled with, allegories. You know, the Bible's filled with all these allegories of how people were guided and protected by the Spirit. Going into a den of lions, dealing with the sharp-tongued lawyers. We'll never be deceived if we're actually working with the truth. So this is why I want to create this foundation. Start praying and fasting. Take advantage of fasting, doing without, so that you can humble yourself to receive guidance. Please, don't do something because I'm telling you to do it. As a matter of fact, I am telling you that we've got a lot of this stuff worked out. But I'm not saying that it's perfect. It's not. There's no such thing as a one-size-fits-all solution for your county. You have very unique players, but those players are using the same principles of evil in destroying you and taking control and managing it and maintaining that control. We have to basically pull together, and we have to pull together on the Constitution. It is the supreme law of the land. So let me get into where we're at, because in the state of Washington, we're literally heading into an election where the governor that is leading in the polls and the guy that's going to be the heir apparent is Bob Ferguson, the lawbender. Bob the Lawbender. This guy has been using the court system against Trump. He has bragged since 2016, or actually since 2017 when Trump got in. He's bragged with 90 some odd, maybe 100 now. I have no idea. I'm not keeping count. But he has used the court system as his weapon in committing an insurgency against the Constitution. And he's gotten away with it the whole way. And he's still getting away with it. And oh, by the way, he's also, you know, because we all make mistakes, he actually, in a case, has been called out in violating the law. And a court judge basically said that the law was broken and Bob Ferguson was guilty of doing that. Now, was that necessarily a judgment? Yeah, it was a judgment at the local level. Well, as you know, the court and how the court works, they constantly bend things with, oh, standing and jurisdiction and so forth. And so as I see it currently, this case has been remanded over privileges and immunities or what have you, and the standings on that. And so I don't think that this case is over, but there's an organization out there. It's called We the People Too, that is using the court administrative process where we can actually, you know, initiate and actually, you know, you could go and read the stuff if you go to wethepeople2.us, wethepeople2.us. And so if you go there, you can actually find the Washington State and, you know, this effort that they've got going. And the effort is to get Bob Ferguson off of the ballot and to remove him from office. Now, to be honest, and this is absolute honesty, Bob Ferguson being removed from the ballot and taken out from office is a good thing. Now, whatever the problem is, and so here's the thing, Bob Ferguson is, you know, I'm not sure if he was elected in 2020 or not, because this decision was done, I think, in 2020, 2021. If he has actually been reelected into office after he had committed this crime, then I don't believe that the statutes would basically say he'd have to be removed, because if he gets reelected, then it's legitimate, because the state of Washington, because he violated this statute, and if you look at the details, it's just really stupid, because I just have no faith that this is going to work, but I'm all in. I'm all in for this one good thing, because it's a win for Washington to get rid of this guy. So I'm not telling people not to do this. Go do this. But this does not solve Washington State problem, the problems that we're facing, nor does it to solve the problem of the nation that we're all facing. We have to get a movement. We have to get people to start demanding full compliance. Because technically, when you look at the technicality, this was not a violation against the U.S. Constitution. Ergo, Section 3 of the 14th Amendment is not a play to where Bob Ferguson can actually be banned from office. So if Bob Ferguson has to pay a fine for whatever he did, or if he's to be removed from office, because bottom line, he may have been charged that he was guilty of violating the law, but that doesn't mean that when it goes to, you know, the final judgment, what is that law broken down to what he has to do? Does it mean he's to be removed? Does it mean he has to pay a fine? I don't know, because this is how stupid this law that they've indoctrinated everybody into and have implemented is one that is designed to protect their corruption. So I have very little faith and I have very little belief that the people that are driving these affidavit movements understand how corrupt the system is. And I constantly have to remind myself to say, this is not the process, period. This doesn't create the movement. This does not get people working together in demanding full compliance of the representative government. Nor does this even restore our Republican form of government. It feeds the beast. So, I'm all in. I want this movement to actually get Bob out. In all honesty, and again, being forthright, I cannot see this happening. And so there are people that are driving behind this, cashing checks because they think that this is a one issue, or I should say they have won on this issue. I'll believe it when I see Bob Ferguson removed, and I'll believe it when we actually have somebody else in office. But here's the problem. That next person that we're going to get in office, Reichert, I do not see Reichert exuding the Constitution. So people are going to hear this and go, oh, you're bad-mouthing a Republican. Folks, if you are not committed as a politician in supporting the Constitution, the full entire Constitution, and your oath of office in making sure that everybody is in support of that Constitution, full compliance, then you're a huge part of the problem. You are the problem. And Reichert is not one that is a champion on the Constitution. Semmy Byrd, who ran his campaign. Semmy Byrd, who was offered the opportunity to try to create a movement in demanding full compliance of the Constitution. Here's my problem. Semmy Byrd turned his back on this opportunity we presented to him well over a year ago. We said didn't even want to hear it. And as a matter of fact, because we never officially met, he can actually say, well, I had no idea, gee whiz, and wash his hands of it. I don't know what the character of that man is, but he made decisions, and we've gotten to this point, and I've been able to actually go back and poke people in the eye. Had we done this in July last year, Washington State would be in a completely different situation position, and nobody can prove me wrong. But here's the problem. I can't get anybody. Actually, there are good people now that are actually starting to recognize GR's right. We need to start moving forward. It's not about GR being right. This is the process that we have to follow. This is not GR's process. GR does not have a copyright. GR does not make a penny on any of this at all. This is about getting you to hold your Republican form of government, your representatives, accountable to the full force of the law and demand that we have our Republican form of government. This has to be a movement, folks. It has to be. And if we're not doing this, then we are allowing and enabling them to continue the warfare against us. When I look at the Chevron case, and so I'm going to make a few comparisons regarding the We the People too and their position, because they brag about the Chevron case. The Chevron case, you know, overturning of the Chevron case, that they impacted and influenced the Supreme Court. Well, I would never brag about that, because the Supreme Court was completely wrong in their decision. They should have shut down the executive administration's period. There's no constitutional standing. I go back, and please, folks, do this. Go look at the overturning of this. If you want it, I'll post it. If you can't find it, I'll post it on the website. Read the Supreme Court opinion and ruling on overturning the Chevron. And when you do that, you'll find that there is no language whatsoever acknowledging that the federal government does not have any authority to be operating these executive laws and administrations that aren't within the confines of the Constitution. Then go back and read the Roe v. Wade case. It was Clarence Thomas that actually uttered the words that this is not within our jurisdiction because it does not arise under the Constitution. This is a state issue. However, do not construe that all things that do not arise under the Constitution do not fall under our jurisdiction. In other words, they basically said, in essence, they acknowledged the Constitution is limited and defined, that abortion is nothing for the federal courts to even have their hands on. But do not consider all these other things that they have their hands on that are not constitutional in the same context. Do you understand what they're saying? They're saying we want to get it right on this one thing, and we're going to do this right on this one thing, but we're not going to accept, you know, dismantling all of these other powers that we are possessing. And you see this with the overturning of the Chevron case. because what do they say? All things will still have to come to the judiciary, that they can't create, execute laws, and enforce their laws. Things still have to, that the judiciary form of government will be preserved, and it will protect people in the ways we want to. Instead of actually saying that this is all unconstitutional, these EPA, energy, all of these different policies, the things that Bob Ferguson has been using, these unconstitutional vestiges that have been created over the past two centuries plus, and actually waging warfare against the Constitution by using these things. I mean, this is how convoluted and how sideways at light speed we're traveling. And folks, it only takes the quick inhale and the exhale, out with the bad, in with the good, out with the bad, and say, none of this is legitimate. That debt isn't legitimate. The money they're spending on all these things that are not enumerated within that Constitution, this is all a facade. It's a house of cards. And when you understand that metaphor, and when you look at the magnitude, a house of cards really marginalizes their evil design. We have, this is why I say this, we have a city of Babylon of cards. It's not just a house. It is a huge metropolis like Babylon of illegitimate government. Now, as I've been dealing with a lot of different people, and I'm going to get into a comparison real quick with the We the People too. But as I've been dealing with, there's a lot of really smart people, and they're actually purporting, because they're basically saying, you know, that this is, these corporations, this is all wrong. We got to do these things. But their problem is that they've accepted the corporate government, or the corporate form of government, the judiciary form of government, the executive form of government, and all these, the party form of government, all these different forms of government other than the Republican form of government, and they've accepted them as legitimate. There is nothing within the founding of every single deviation that was legitimate. This goes back to what Hamilton did in 1790 with the Assumption Act. That in itself was not legitimate. What should have happened was the state legislature should have stepped in and said, stop. And you know what? Because that was the first deviation. And now a million and some odd later deviations, a billion and some odd deviations that have occurred that have built off of that and a whole bunch of others, the states can still come in and with a puff blow this metropolis down, this metropolis of cards down that fast. Because all they have to do is say, you do not have the authority. And all they need to do, and this is why when you look at these petitions put it into the hands of our representatives. And so I would beg and plead you folks, go to reclaimingtherepublic.org and read the petitions. They all end with the same eight steps that they need to take. Now, there can be improvements to the language in these steps. There's no doubt in my mind that we could improve upon these things. And I'm all for improving. I'm not saying that this is the end of end all. But this is so clear and concise. And actually, I got to give credit for a lot of these people with approbations and saying, well, we really like this affidavit stuff and all of that. And we just, you know, don't see, you know, what you're saying. And so I made a concession. And I've put it out there, and I think we have to make a change to the petitions, because we need to make sure that your representatives do not follow. They're not the representatives of that lawyer or the prosecuting attorney. They are representatives of the people. And so when we petition them, everything that we're asking literally falls within their will well to do. They have the authority to do it. They have the authority to create the committee. They have the authority to demand a committee define and definitize the Constitution. They have the authority to demand a committee actually go through and initiate the audit. auditing the Constitution, the U.S. Constitution, as well as the state constitution, to find variations and violations. They have that authority. And if they listen to a lawyer to say, well, you don't have to respond to that, then they are failing us in our Republican form of government, as well as their oath of office to support this Constitution. When I say this Constitution, I'm saying the specific organic or the original Constitution that was written for and by the states, by their delegates at the Constitutional Convention, and ratified by the states. So if you don't know, folks, and I say this just so you understand, there are actually two constitutions. People will tell you there's five. No. Today, there is literally two constitutions. There may have been steps and changes down the road regarding some deviation, because there's some people that play these nuances. Oh, well, you know, we don't accept the 14th and, you know, the 13th, 14th, what's in. Folks, if the states ratified it, they ratified it. Because in the organic, original text of the Constitution, if 3/4 of the states actually make an amendment, they believe they're amending that original document, then it's amended. And I will, and you've heard me say this, there are no boogeymans within those amendments. When you read them, fortunately for us, the divine hand of providence has protected us, because he befounded the people that wrote those, because they didn't know what they were doing, and they failed to actually do what they intended to do. They may have gotten the outcomes because they basically fooled us in what those words mean, but there's proof and evidence that those amendments, like the 17th and the 16th, the way they're being implemented are direct violations of the Constitution. So why are we fighting over these stupid things instead of uniting on the Constitution? Prove me wrong. Prove me wrong this day. Fast, pray, read Madison's words. Read the words of the ratification base, because those are the essential scriptures of that Constitution. That is where you're going to learn what every line really means. And I am here to tell you there is no lack of a consensus. There is no discord. There is no conflict between how one state defined the necessary and proper clause to the next state. They've said different words. They didn't say it identically, but the way they framed the necessary and proper clause, the way they framed the general defense and welfare clause, the commerce clause, the supremacy clause, and on the exclusive legislation, all of these clauses, as it was framed in the ratification debates, has been harmonious. Folks, I want you to fathom this. There's a reason why it was harmonious, because the divine hand of providence ensured that we would have everything we need in that document to stand up and dust ourselves off and free ourselves and break the chains of Lucifer and this global movement of communism. I hate to sound like the preacher, but there is this divine nature. And when we deny this, then we really think and we're placing this strictly on the shoulders and in the hands of men. And so we have to maintain, this is why I'm pleading with you to please pray and please fast on this. Now, I was going to actually go through a contrast between the We the People 2 affidavits and their pleading to please do, please take note, or please whatever, in their language on the invasion. Go read their affidavit on the invasion and how little they really place constitutional context. As a matter of fact, I want to point out that they're actually using case law and opinion, even John Locke, who had nothing to do with our Constitution. Why even waste your time in reading all of that blather when there's plenty of meat within the Constitution, the ratification debates, underneath the context of the Constitution, to actually place full context that every person in Congress who fails to call for the militia to repel the invasion, which the Constitution still to this day demands when we're being invaded, everybody needs to be deported. And all of these people who have failed to do that must, that's all capitals. That means every person in Congress must be removed because they failed to support the Constitution by the letter and design of Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. So, folks, when you realize how black and white contract law is, and when you realize how there's no fudging, how you have the devil not only by the tail, you have him bound. Period. The supreme law of the land prevails. I can't understand why I keep on getting this flack, this stonewalling, and all of, oh, give me more wiggle room, GR, because that's what I get from the politicians I deal with in Washington State. I've got great politicians out in the other states, and I'm going to tell you, I still get these little desires. Please give us some wiggle room. Please, come on. Let us do it our own way. And you know what? They are a part of the problem. We have to get people on board. It's not about GR's way. It's about the Lord's way of abiding by the law. And I think that this is really that black and white. It is that binary. You're either in compliance, or when you start deviating, this goes back down to the philosophical design of the scale of liberty. When you are in the white on the scale of liberty, you demand that everybody must become informed and make the decisions for themselves and face the consequences. That is the true form and essence of liberty. On the other end, in the black, you are constrained, you are entitled, you are enabled, and everything you do, you must do, and this is what you will get. That is subjugation. That is the exact opposite of liberty. And this is why I tell you, folks, this is a linear scale. It is not circular. You can't go so far to the scale of liberty that you find yourself in the black. You literally have to incrementally step away from the white, away from the light of truth, and slowly ensconce yourself in darkness as you move towards the black. It is that simple. Prove me wrong. Go through these petitions. I'm not saying these petitions are perfect. You're going to find grammar problems. I have to concede. I'm not a great writer. I'm not a perfect communicator. I am not perfect. I am a mere man. And I have to answer for my own bad choices and my own decisions. We all have to. But we have to put aside those problems. We have to quit taking a scorched earth attitude regarding whether this person had an adulterous affair or whether this person did drugs or whatever. It doesn't matter as long as we're all working on that path. You fall off that path, then, you know, get yourself right and get back on the path. But we're not going to follow you when you fall off the path. And we all know when you're not on the path, because if you're not seeking full compliance, then you are seeking a deviation, and you are actually leading us down a path of destruction. Because as Madison and Jefferson stated in those resolutions, that is the only outcome when you allow deviations. And look how far we've gone, and look at how well we've lasted. That is the divine nature of the Constitution. We've lasted this long. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.